ongoing dialogue of the God Journey podcast. Many of us are waking up to God's not a formula to be worked. He's a God who loves us, who has a purpose in the world to redeem it back to himself, who will work good in our lives through the most horrible things that we face.
When we first started this whole podcast thing, you and I were trying to come up with a name. I just remember somehow the whole God Journey thing settled.
And we've had people tell us that was a stupid name.
Those just few words say an awful lot of true things. This isn't my journey. This isn't just my deal, my little story. It's not about me. I am just a supporting actor in a greater drama that isn't about me.
Well, I'm Wayne Jacobson.
And I'm still Brad Cummings.
Still?
Yep. Still Brad Cummings.
So I've got a question for you.
What?
When are we having the God Journey Christmas party?
Well, let's do it today.
No, let's not.
What is the God Journey Christmas party?
It's, I guess, when you and I get our families together and we eat something.
Party.
Yeah. Shouldn't we have a party?
Yeah, you can come over and pack books.
had two guys from the interior part of the country that's all iced over today. They said, does Brad need anybody to come out and pack books for him? Because we want to get out of this whole area.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I told them.
Fly now.
Come on out.
Just tell me where you're at. I'll pick you up.
They're willing to miss their whole family deal for Christmas and everything. So you might.
Wouldn't that be pretty? I mean, some of the pictures of that ice storm are just outrageous. I mean, I sat there. Ooh, Shackland. You know, we should film this now. This doesn't happen that often.
You know, it's like everything else in life. Incredibly beautiful. Boy, see one of those ice storms and everything encased in crystal, particularly when the sun comes out and shines through it, there is nothing more beautiful to behold in all the world. But the destruction that it's causing and hundreds of thousands of people without any heat or electricity, and I mean, that is cold. We were in that last year. Remember when I was stranded on a freeway with Kent?
Yeah.
That was during one of those ice storms, man. Nothing happens. You can't move. So it's like everything else in life. Incredible beauty. An incredible disaster all rolled into one.
Yeah, we got stranded in a snowstorm up at Schaefer.
This is not snow. This is ice.
I know that, but it was still cold. We were all huddled in one room around a little, you know, potbelly stove and just going like, wow, this is a different holiday.
Boy.
I mean, it was really wild.
Yeah, so you guys in the middle part of the country, and now it's moving to the East Coast today, so you guys trying to stay warm back there. And if you want to pack books.
Yeah, come my way. Just tell me you're coming. We'll pick you up. Yeah, we'll put you to work. My God, I need a little army.
And if 200 people show up, what are you going to do?
That would be fine.
Okay.
We actually would probably get caught up.
And you want to give your phone number out? Because I don't want them calling you.
No, but you know what? I'm declaring email bankruptcy again. I'm 300 behind.
You can't keep doing it.
Wow.
You just keep doing it.
Maybe that's the problem, is you do it once and it feels good.
Yeah.
And you just go like, I have no hope of catching up. Ridiculous.
Yeah. Well, I'm telling you, you've got to hire staff.
I know that. We're looking for them.
Good. Then do it. It's crazy.
Hey, my kids think Christmas. They took a vote this morning at the breakfast table. Christmas is the best holiday. And it just is the best holiday. And they looked around and they like the way the house is decorated. They just think it's all fun. And Jonathan at breakfast says, you know what? It's all about Jesus' birthday.
Since when?
Well, that's what he said, but it was all good. And I was just fun listening to the simplicity of their hearts, the excitement of the season, and going like, you know what? We're just ranking the holidays, and hands down, Christmas is the best.
Okay. I'm kind of bah humbuggy about Christmas, to be honest.
I know, and I've really been praying for you that you'd get over that.
Why are
you bah humbuggy? What's your deal?
It's just too much work.
No.
I love Christmas Eve, Christmas Day, hanging out with family. I love that part of it. But all the shopping and traffic and people.
I don't shop.
Well, there's a part of it right there. But, you know, hanging up, decorating. I even put three snowflakes in my window up here in the God Journey studio. How's that?
That's beautiful.
Yeah, Turn them on, buddy.
That's not wasted.
I'm trying to get in the season. And I put lights out. So, you know, it's just two or three days of work. Then you got to take it all down again.
I was hanging on our roof. I'm leaning over the edge to put up the lights. We got those icicle ones. Yeah. We don't have the real ice storms, so it's not cool. So we just hang lights around our ears. Yeah, we pretend out here. Yeah. But I'm up there
while we're putting them up in our t-shirts.
Yeah, and I got a gaggle of little kids looking up like, oh, You know, like, because I was, you know, 30-some feet up in the air.
Are you trying to kill yourself?
No, but it was fun.
Were you ever in a dangerous spot leaning over the second?
Yes, I was.
Well, then what
once
are you
or twice, and you get that little heart race, go like, oh, please.
Yeah, like, what are you doing? That's like inviting. That's why the holiday season, like, people kill themselves from lights.
It's
from
a light. Rush. I didn't kill myself. It
no,
was
jumping
rush.
Off a mountain with a hang glider, that's a rush.
I felt real close to God. God said, hold me, Lord, hold me. And so it all worked. It was great.
That's nuts. That's why I hate the holiday.
Don't get over the Bah Humbug thing, Jacobson.
It's my image now. It's too hard to change. I've got a sweatshirt and everything that says Bah Humbug on it for my family.
You are the original Grinch, so my kids could point at you and go, you know, what's that, Do-Re-Dom?
I'm not the original Grinch. I'm fairly recent to the whole scene. The original Grinch was before my time, I think.
Hey, anyway. Well, our kids voted our house as the best decorated, so it was all worth it.
That's self-serving vote.
Well, hey, if they're the judges, I didn't get voted off. I live for another week.
That's like when people vote for things, you can't vote for your own thing. That's exactly
why. Why not?
Because that's just the way
if
it is.
If it's the best, it's the best. Humility just says that's the best.
Humility says that. Oh,
civil agreement with God.
Let's get on to something more ridiculous. I'm serious.
Okay.
I'm kidding.
You got some serious email there.
Ah, we got some good stuff. Kimber wrote us a note, and she said, and this is our podcast recently about It's Not About the Church.
Yeah.
Because people are not about, what did we say it was about?
I know it's about Jesus.
Oh, boy.
I don't know what the podcast was about that you're referring to.
I don't know the name of it, but it was talking about the box is not the institution, but the box of religious obligation. And she said, I think I'm totally still classifying the box as the institution. Hope you guys will discuss this a little more. I feel like I'm trying to unravel a spool of filament. Just when I'm about to get it straightened out, it breaks. I have to find that fine thread all over again. I have so much respect and appreciation for what you and Brad are doing. Although I'm out of the church right now, I'm still in fellowship. She said, put church in quotes, good. I'm still in fellowship, and I'm coming across more and more kindreds on my journey who are both in and out of, air quote, church again. But they're definitely out of the box. I would never have been brave enough to begin this journey solely dependent on God for direction had it not been for your podcasts, the forum and the transition series, and, of course, the Jake book. Oh, so she mentions all my favorite things.
There you go.
These are a few of my favorites. Oh, that's my Christmas.
There you go.
Sound of Music.
Yeah, but you're not Bah Humbug. That's all
yeah,
good.
I think that's the hardest thing for people to get. Like she's talking about, you know, we say the box, and the box is so easy to think of four walls and a Sunday morning building, and it's all that. And yet, really, that isn't, I mean, we keep trying to say that that's not the point at all. It's this religious way of thinking, of obligation, of covering, of
yeah, the whole performance treadmill of, you know, I've got to somehow, you know, perform so that God will love me. That is the crux of it, that it's hard to get off that treadmill because so much of the systems and the institutions are trying to equate how they're doing or evaluate how they're doing, and how else do they do that? They have some sort of indicator that says, well, if we have this kind of participation or that, then we must be doing well. And it's like spiritual temperature taking is one of the main roots that's going on there. You just go like, why do we think this way? Well, we got a whole bunch of things that reinforce that. So I think it is a real challenge.
I think it is.
To step back and go, okay, it's not about whether I do sit in a service or don't sit in a service or whether I do join a club or don't join a club. It's how am I relating to God, directly or indirectly?
How do I know him, and am I knowing him? I think what Dallas Willard calls the whole religious obligation thing as being a shame management system. I think that's a good way to say it, because what preys on our whole need to perform and desire for this thing to look great for other people looking in on us, the whole idea of that is that we're trying to manage people's sense of shame. They don't feel good about God. They don't feel like they measure up. They don't feel like whatever. So if you do these things, you can measure up. And instead of liberating people from their sense of shame, it just manipulates it. I think that's why it's hard to see outside that box, because the appeal is inside us. It's not just what people are doing on the outside. Is there's an appeal in us that if we haven't had our shame resolved at the cross, we really do want to do something that makes things right. At least in our mind, and gives us that illusion of control.
You know what's so amazing about, you know, like you look at the beginning in the garden, and there they are, Adam and Eve, and they're naked and yet without shame. And you look at that, you know, I did some study into the word, you know, naked and stuff like that.
Yeah, I'm surprised.
Of course you did,
so
Brad.
So that's what your Google search was about.
What kind of research were you doing, Brad? No, don't even go there, dude.
Gee, wow.
But the reality is, I mean, when you're in the shower, no one really thinks of themselves as, quote, being naked. You only really think about it when you – it carries the connotation open to the gaze of. And you don't really think about being naked unless you're aware that somehow I could be seen. And here they are, open to the gaze of, and they're without shame. I think so many of us in our lives, the biggest point of freedom would not be, you know, shedding, quote, your clothes, but would be to be able to not worry about what other people think. And when you're in those corporate systems and structures, the shame reinforcement is the constant evaluation, wondering, how am I doing?
Yeah.
Do they like me? Do they not like me? Am I performing well? Am I not performing well? And that's where all the shame is fostered.
And when you cease to play that game, the thing that you get right away is, what are people saying about me? Because they are. Because we did when we were playing that game. We talk about people who are not playing that game. And that sense of family or close friends who no longer approve of my journey, who feel like I've gone off the deep end, no longer loving Jesus anymore because I'm not coming and fitting into the process of it. I think that's, you know, part of what we try and do with people sometimes is try and bolster them and give them their approval. I think part of Barna's book, Revolution, was to try and give people that sense of approval. You're okay if you're on the outside, because the most spiritual believers are on the outside of the deal. And you're just going, okay, no, that's the whole wrong spirit.
That's still managing shame.
That's still reinforcing this thing that what you think about me counts more than what I know God thinks about me today and how I live in Him.
Yeah.
And so if you don't ever get to that root, you're going to keep jumping from one group to another, still trying to find favor and feeling like we're more in than those people are, no matter where that goes. And I think that the greatest part of this journey is somehow letting that need for approval, which is our sense of shame, die at the cross and know that it's not about performing for God or for other people. It's about living in a relationship with Him that's transforming over time.
Yeah, I mean, I think wonderfully, I think we've been away from the whole dynamics long enough to the point that until you mention it, I haven't really sat there thinking, gee, what do people think about me? And I recognize, gosh, I used to be consumed
absolutely
with that question and having to deal with it or what my answer is. And now you're just going like, what an absolute liberty. I haven't even thought about that for a while.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't have a bunch of people kind of like, ooh, I wonder if he's really still backslidden. I wonder if we can re-engage him in this. I have just felt so wonderfully free to be able to just enjoy the relationship that's happening and to watch the life of Christ being cultivated in our family.
Yeah.
I mean, it's neat to watch that and go like, there's no props here. There's no performing here. It's just genuine in my kids. You know, Jared's a little older than Jonathan, and Jonathan's now kind of blossoming in his maturation where he's, you know, he's asking questions for himself. It's mm-hmm. not because he needs to. It's not because, well, Sunday school was this. It was more like life is bringing this relevant. And you're just going like, oh, gosh, that feels so natural and so cool and so nice and so shame-free.
Yeah, isn't that good? And I got an email from someone this week, and in fact, I put up on my blog because they were saying, how do I get people to understand? Because they've kind of been on this journey, but they've been out of town. They're moving back home, and all their friends go to one of these things, and now they're not feeling like they're probably going to. And saying, how do I get people to understand what I'm doing? And the angst of that, I remember thinking that way.
You can't.
And the freedom is, and this is the truth about relationships. Whenever something like, how do I get someone to do something?
Yeah, oops.
That you're already off the relational page because you're already about, this is about me. I want them to think well of me. So how do I get them? Instead of, relationships are what they are.
Yeah.
They go as deep as they go. And if people stay superficial, and part of it was, you know, I want to get to the depths of sharing, but I talk about the depth of my thing, and then they just come off with some weird theological question, which is just kind of empty. And I say, they are where they are. The only thing, or the freest things about relationship is let them be where they are.
Yeah.
If they go deeper, great. And if they don't, you got to love people where they are, because there's no way you can move them to someplace else.
Well, it's like taking someone and saying, oh, yeah, I just want to have some intimacy and I want to really relate. It's like grabbing someone and diving into the deep end of the pool without their permission with them.
Yeah.
And you're just going like, who really says thank you for that?
Yeah, for sure. Sure.
It's like, no. I mean, I sort of feel like, gosh, out of our own insecurity, I think we're driven. The compulsions come out of our insecurities. I want something that isn't yet there, but I'm going to make it happen. And I don't think you – I think it's always elusive. I don't think you ever
get
what it is that you're trying to make.
I think that's where we get to give up. Let it be what it is. That's where the difference between reality and us trying to shape this illusion around us. And part of taking the blinders off and living in God the way he wants us to live God is I'm going to let things be what they are. I'm not going to try and reshape them in my image or reshape them by my needs. And I tell you, I think you find healthy, wonderful relationships faster living that way than to try to get your friend to respond to you the way you think they should or the way you need them to respond. It's just kind of nuts.
So how does that work with the thought of, you know, I want to be intentional about something? You know, I, in terms of my desire to be the kind of person or, you know, friend that I want to be to people, and there's intentionality there, which I think is not a bad thing.
No, I think intentionality is very helpful.
I think when you talk about this, a lot of times people go like, well, that just sounds so passive, like I don't do anything. And that's not the case.
Right. And I think being intentional about relationships means I become a relational person. I treat everybody that comes into the orbit of my life in a relational way, and I love them. It's about what I'm giving to them. It's not about what I'm demanding they give to me.
Yeah.
You know, I had a couple of the Mormon missionaries over here on Monday. They stopped by a week ago and just said, hey, we'd really like to talk to you. You know, your neighbor's been telling us about this. And I know it's part of the, you know.
You're on the list.
Well, it's a throw to the lions kind of deal, I think, because these guys are young. And just, I tell you, and they were wonderfully sweet guys, well-intentioned. You know, they're giving 2 years of their life to go on the mission deal. But why you put 18-year-olds sitting on my couch across from me telling me that what I know about God can't be true and this is the only right way? And I look and say, and how old are you? And what, you know, what have you experienced about life? And I said, look, you guys want to come over and talk to me? I'm really happy to talk to you. If you're going to come over and need to give me your first lesson for me to respond to, listen, I've heard your lesson. I've heard it a lot. I don't believe the way you've got it pictured is the right way. So they came over, and every time they'd start them, go, whoa, I thought we weren't going to do this. Oh, yeah, okay. See, they kept trying to get it on that page. It was incredibly manipulative.
That's what they've been trained to do.
Well, and they're scared to talk beyond that because they don't have all the answers. I think at one point, and so we're talking about the Jesus of the Bible, and yeah, it's the same Jesus that they live in. Also, I said, so how do you get the Jesus of the Bible? How do you get from that to temples and buildings and money and hierarchical institutions when the early disciples didn't do that? The early church didn't. How do you get there? And he said, well, you know, it's what every group gets. I said, my point exactly. Yeah, I think you're different from the Catholics or the Baptists or the Presbyterians. They're like, really? It's just, how do you get from the Jesus of the Bible loving people who were in front of him to we've got to manage an authoritative structure of hierarchical passing? And I said, you guys, I mean, Catholics at least try and get back to Peter. You guys just start in 1830 and say, yeah, it didn't work first time around. So the apostles and Jesus – it didn't work, so he's got to come back and redo it all in 1830. I said, that's what doesn't make sense to me. I wake up to that Jesus every morning. I love him. I live the way he wants to live. It makes sense in my life. I don't know why getting into this deal to add to all the other deals I've been into in my life is going to benefit me. And I didn't know what to do with it.
What they do? Are they just blank stares?
They kind of go back to the lesson. They kind of go back. Yeah. And then I do it. Oh. You know, that's what I love about being really relational. It doesn't mean you get walked on. I do realize why these people, and I honestly think those 18-year-olds being in your front room, that is really not about convincing you because that doesn't work.
Right.
What that's really about is embedding those people in that faith that they've risked so much for now they will never question.
Right.
I think that's what lies at the heart of it, and that's why it's so dangerous for them. But what's wonderful about it is I don't have to go where – I can be honest in this relationship. I'm not intimidated by it, and you want to pull a different – I'm like, oh, hold on a minute. I thought we said we weren't doing that. They would look at me and kind of smile. But every time they go on script, they're little Sheba, man. I don't know what her problem is. Barking away today. But, yeah, it could be it. So it was an interesting conversation. I loved having a chance to be real with them. And they finally left. I don't know when I see them again. They wanted to come back and give me lesson two. I said, I didn't get lesson one yet. And they said, well, let's pray. Maybe you can pray for us. And I said, I'll be happy to pray for you. And they said, well, you know what? You know, at least people who are really seeking God, you know, find this truth. I said, whoa. You're going to come in here and tell me I'm not really seeking God because I didn't get to the same conclusion you got to. I said, man, I'm 54 years old. You really want to say that to me? Really? And I was nice about it, but I think I'm not sure I'll see him again. That's for sure.
But it is so strange that as opposed to, I mean, Jesus didn't come in there seeking to pick a fight, it didn't seem. You know, it's like,
hey, when you have the truth, you don't need to.
I know.
You really don't.
And there isn't the coercion of, you must adopt this, or if you don't believe this, it's sort of like Jesus would say some things that sort of, you know, separated the herd. You know what I mean?
Think?
Unless you drink, you eat my flesh and drink my blood, you have no part of me. Okay, that sort of separates the herd. It's like, whoa, okay. But he didn't seemingly, you know, the tone of voice isn't there, but you're like, I don't think he said it with some agenda as if, here's, you know, I'm going to throw a hand grenade at you. It's more like, it's just reality.
But the bottom line comes back to, is this about me or is it about you? And that's what Jesus is saying. Are you following me because you've heard words of life and you want them, or you just got fed? You got fed free and you're just thinking, man, it's a free lunch. I'll keep chasing this guy around for free lunch. And I think that continues to happen. Laura had a great question. Last, this is probably a few months ago, she sent this to me. She said, I got a question for you guys, and I think it fits what we're talking about now. Recently, I've run across three different families that have bounced out of the institution, not gently, mind you. All the families have been out for 5 years or more, and instead of drawing into a closer relationship with Father, they appear through their own admission to have fallen away from God. One guy said he doesn't even believe God anymore. This guy grew up a missionary in South Africa, was a leader in the church for years. He left through betrayal and rejection, has now totally fallen into unbelief. I'll admit there are times on this journey where I've wondered if God is even real or is all smoke and mirrors. At times he seems to be enjoying digging for the truth or the lie right out of me. How often do you see this scenario where people can't separate the religion that hurt them from the Jesus who loves them?
I think it happens a ton.
It does.
I mean, I think that's the grand misconfusion there. It's like, and what's going on, it's like, that's what everyone has always understood, quote, the church to be. It's not the fellowship of those who have the life of Christ inside them. It's that thing over there, that group.
And how it treats you.
And it's like, gosh, unless you kind of embrace what is the agenda of that group, you're going to get the ergo, you're not with God. Because in the name of God, we've embraced this agenda. So if you don't embrace this agenda, you're not really embracing God. And that's the card that gets played out on people. And how destructive, how hurtful. I mean, just the same thing of the Mormon guys at your door trying to give you the lessons. It's like, suppose they're relating to you, there's the presence of that agenda. And so I do think that's what's hurtful to most people.
But why don't some people see through it? Why do some people can't separate God from the failure of the institution?
Well, I think it may well be because they don't ever have a defining point that says, here is the person.
That's what I would think. I would just say, gosh, so for all that missionary kid growing up doing X, Y, and Z, their relationship with God was always defined by their relationship to
the religious
deal, that whole religious thing. And to me, that's what I think is so subtly dangerous about it, and why people do end up bounced out. And it's not just, wow, I see some fallacies and I'm just going to grow deeper in Jesus. They're just out going, the whole thing's a fraud. Even Jesus is a fraud. And she, I like Laura admitting, saying, you know, sometimes I've wondered that. You know, sometimes, right. I've wondered that too. I don't wonder it now, but there were times early in this journey where you're just kind of pushing away from things and going, is there a reality here beyond this illusion and control and all that kind of thing? And the good news is there is. There is a reality to it all. And when that takes hold your life and you do see God as very different from all the boxes we put him in, whether it's Sunday morning things or house club things or whatever, when you see God outside that and know him as a person and wake up to him every day, that's why I'm sitting on my couch. They're talking about this Jesus who would do all these things. I'm going, no, listen, I was with him this morning. Believe me, he's not real excited about all this stuff. And I said, I would say as much for you guys as I would the Catholics or anybody else. I just don't think, can he use it? Sure. Is he going to be in places to make himself known? Yeah, he wants to make himself known.
Right.
But did he come to do all this? And
no.
You're saying yes. And I'm saying, I don't think so.
See, but that's all. I think that's all some people have ever known. And in that context, that is God. The whole religious ball over there, that's God. I haven't learned to relate to him as a person. He doesn't communicate proactively to me. I do all the things that I've been told are the things that good people, good religious people do. And so that's my God. And you can't, I mean, until Jesus reveals himself as a person to you individually, you're not going to be able to see the difference. You're going to have that little befuddled look that kind of says, what are you talking about? Why are you against that? And the whole idea that, you know, gosh, these people have kind of bounced out of the system and now, therefore, they have fallen away from God. My first response was, I don't think they ever had him to fall away from.
They may not have. That could be very well true. Or some people get so locked up in their hurts that they've lost sight of the God they did know. That's also possible. She ends with this. Do you think some will go to the grave like this?
You know what? I think, unfortunately, that's a very real possibility. I mean, I know folks that are just so entrenched in their hurt that the idea of healing, they lock that door.
Yeah, and I would take a different tack on the question because I like the question. Do some will go to the grave like this? It's like, okay, there we are in our imagined futures again.
Right.
You know, we're just called to live today and love who's before us. And people are, all the stories unfolding, people around you, everything going on around you is in the middle of a chapter, not the end of the story. And so, yeah, I know people who've been bitter, rejected God, angry for years, 10, 12, 15 years, that God found a way to sneak back in there over time. And so we just don't know. The answer is we have no idea.
Yeah,
but I know God's really good at finding his kids. We know he's really good at that.
I don't have to be concerned of someone's, you know, embittered state that God isn't going to be there working on their heart. I mean, the reality is he wants in and he loves them far more than you and I are ever going to, quote, be concerned about somebody.
Yeah.
And so I don't have to, ooh, I'm going to be anxious over their eternal destiny. You know what? I'm pretty sure the eternal one is far more concerned about that and is at work there.
Yeah.
And will take every single opportunity that's available to try to open that life.
Yeah, to someone like Laura, what do you do with people like this? You just love them. You find whatever door you can access them to communicate and express love to them as human beings, not try to convince them you're wrong and get back to God. All that saying,
that drives people further away.
It does. It ruins the relationship. But to look to love people like this, to hang out with people who don't see things clearly, who are kind of lost, that's, you know, the whole idea of the religion thing is you've got to agree with me or I've got to marginalize you. And I think living relationally is you don't have to agree with me for me to care about you and for me to find ways to be with you. And hopefully out of a love relationship, God may open some doors to you. But I'm not... To me, the deal is I've got to change your mind about this. I don't have to change your mind. I just get to love you. And the Holy Spirit works in that loving. And how he changes. And I get to be there for the process. I've known lots of people who left rejected, hurt, angry, even rejected God in the midst of it. And yet at some future point, God worms his way back in there. And they come to see who he is. And so I just say, yeah, keep loving folks like that. Don't worry about their future, you got to come out, fix all that for them. Love them, and you'd be amazed at what God does in the simplicity of our loving.
Well, I mean, this is a little interesting twist, but, you know, in the Gospels, when Jesus heals some folks, it's like he didn't seem to put some obligation on the release and the gift of healing. He just seemed to heal, you know, heal folks. And it's not like, now, better show up to the meeting. Or, please, got to be my follower.
Yep.
You know, and it's like you look at that and it's like, I'll be honest, back in my little pastoring days, I would look at some of that and I go like, gosh, you mean he healed them without trying to fold them? You know, yep. Got to bring them into the pen. And you're just going like, what's in the heart of God that God just cares to love people without obligation? That he's not looking for payment. He's not even demanding that you love him back. He's going to love regardless.
But religion says otherwise, and that's where we've been schooled for so long. I think you're dead right, but it's hard for people, particularly if we're just seeing the box as where we started with Kimber. The box is people who go to Sunday morning thing. If that's what you think it is, then you can get free of that and just end up in another place of bondage and still live out this religious kind of, I've got to jump through this hoop for God. God's only going to love me if I'm obligated to him. Instead of, he wants a real relationship with you and knows if he gets it, that will take care of everything else. You will not need obligation because love will win out over that every time. And if not, whether we end up rejecting it like Laura suggests, or this is Hound Sound on the forum, had this comment a few weeks back, and it was part of the same kind of context about defining the box. Could this out-of-the-box anti-IC thinking, anti-institutional church thinking, process, whatever, become a religion of its own? Could us or those involved in it or experiencing Christ outside the box create our own rules without realizing it? If so, what rules would creep in that we need to watch out for?
I think absolutely. I think that's one of the biggest dangers is of misdiagnosing that it's about whether you go to a meeting
Sunday
or
morning,
not,
exactly.
Or you're part of a group or not. It's like that isn't the box. The box is the dynamic by which I relate to God.
And
my
what?
Understanding of the person of who he is that the performance-driven one, or is it the fact that, you know what, it's all settled at the cross once and for all, and now that's trying to be unveiled with revelation to my soul.
Yeah, for those experiencing Christ outside the box, what kind of rules could creep in that we need to watch out for? I think it's an interesting question.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think so much of that, if it's lived in reaction, you're just going to make your own little traditions of, well, we don't do this because we used to do that.
And they're wrong, and now we're in a better place.
Be more right.
See that wrong and better place? Do you hear the still that same language of religion,
yeah,
seeking for my favor and seeking for my approval instead of, you know, I'm just following God here. And I may be wrong, I may be right. I'm growing every day to know him better, and I just want to find people who are also part of that journey. Wow.
Do you remember the whole movie Truman Show a while back?
Oh, yeah.
What a brilliant little analogy. I don't know if anyone ever intended it, but it's like here is in this little world where it's basically manufactured by Christoph or Christ of.
Yep.
And, you know, in the midst of this storm, he finally, you know, he sees this longing to get out of this little manufactured world. And finally the boat, you know, pokes through.
Runs into the sky.
And he's going like, and you get this. You know, this eager anticipation of everyone else watching, will he have the courage to leave what he's always known for what he doesn't know? And when you look at Abraham and the call of God, go to a land that I will show you. All he's knowing is get out of where you have been and what you know and follow me in relationship to a place I'll show you. That's terrifying for most people. And it's not about, now, your father is all wrong. God never said that to Abraham. He didn't say, here's why I'm calling you out. It's like he's just saying, I'm wanting to take you out of the thing that you know how to control and the things that you've always set up, and I'm going to lead you into something that will demand relationship. I'm not telling you where we're going. Why? Well, because then you won't try to get there on your own. And I think that that really is the life of faith. And I think that is frightening to the way most people and how our culture tries to approach living daily life. That's scary. That's like, well, are you just flying by the seat of your pants? Well, kind of. Yeah, I mean, you know, not by design. Like that's, I love that, but it's like I don't know the other option if I'm trying to follow a voice.
And not that flying by the seat of your pants is following Jesus, but when it does come to the end of your own confidence in your own wisdom, confidence in your own abilities, confidence in your own performances, it does eat that away. So it's like, well, yeah, I could put a 5-year plan out here, but what's the use? None of the other ones have ever worked. So why would I keep doing that? And I wonder when you said about the Truman Show, you need to get out of this place. I wonder how many people thought immediately, well, that's Brad telling us to get out of that Sunday morning club deal.
Uh-uh.
Which it wasn't.
No.
Because the place is that religious mindset of performance,
right,
rather than the engagement of a living person who, out of that friendship, makes sense of our lives and leads us in ways he wants us to go.
Yeah, and there's another little interesting thing about that the movie Truman. When all of a sudden he says, well, is this all just, you know, a charade? Is this all fake? And he does get the commentary, no, but you were real. And it's like, I think so many times the overreaction, when all of a sudden you recognize that somehow what I've been limited by, this little construct that, you know, I thought this was it, the overreaction of wanting to throw it all away. And you're like, no. You know what? That might have just been the training wheels of where God met you on this journey, where God's not saying, now, what you need to decide is that all institutions totally are wrong. That's not what he's trying to do here.
And all people are fake. And
yeah.
All, yeah.
It's like, don't overreact in the midst of all this. I think what we're looking for, what God's desiring is, will I be real? As opposed to, will I perform out of my insecurities? Can I just sort of stand there in the nakedness of what's going on and be without shame, knowing that he's done something that is the shame removal. I don't have to do anything here. Sure, I might be naked. Sure, that might be there in my life. Oh, gosh, that's not a good thing. But guess what? I'm powerless to try to get it removed.
Yep.
But he can step into that, and I don't have to run and hide.
And all those are the same thing, aren't they? Like they obligation, are. The fear, the control, the shame. That to me, that's the box. When we're talking about people thinking outside the box of organized religion. That's what we're talking about. It's a different way of seeing God and living in him. And a different way of seeing the family. So the family isn't boxed or unboxed, big boxes or little boxes. The family is people who know Jesus I live around. That's the family. And my engagement with them gives me an engagement with the family. And so it's not having to figure out how it is that I change everybody else to think the way I think. I like what you said about the Truman thing. No, you are real. And I think what God wants us to do and how we really penetrate the world and make some kind of effect on people around us is simply we begin to live in a real place with him in love with other people. We don't try to change them. We don't try to fix all the things. We don't rag on everything we think is wrong or evil or not right in the world. We simply begin to live in the reality of who God is. And we're honest with people who are asking questions of us in the conversations we're in. We're just simply honest because we have nothing to hide anymore.
Right.
We don't have to pretend to be what we're not. No, I don't fit into your little deal, but yeah, I'm sorry about that. I'm trying to follow Jesus here. And I think it's that reality. Leanne gave us this. She was part of a house church situation that kind of didn't go well. And she, at the end of it, she says, now I understand very clearly the house church is not the answer either. I'm not suggesting that genuine things didn't happen in the house church, because they did. I like that.
Yeah, it's good.
Not that genuine things didn't happen in all the places where we've wondered, because they do. It's not a rejection of everything. But I think it was a season, like stepping stones, taking us from organized religion to a more simple way of doing church, to where I'm going now. I feel so free nearly every day now. I have a smile on my face. That of late wasn't always there. The joy of serving has come back with more expectancy of what God will do rather than my personal expectations.
Wow.
See, that to me, that's the
huge
fruit of getting outside the box. It's just getting into the freedom that now I can live and love and serve in the freedom and joy of being God's child in the earth, not because I'm trying to perform and deal with my shame and trying to look good.
Yeah, I mean, you bring us back to the garden for a second. How goofy if here's God creating Adam and Eve, there they are, and you know, I think to a measure they have the glory of God resting on them, and then all of a sudden they've exchanged that for some leads. And God's got to go, you know, he's looking like, I wonder why you're wearing the leaves. What's with that? Who suggested that you need to wear leaves?
As a Gap store friend.
No, but I mean, if you think about that, and just the simplicity of looking at going, gosh, why did you feel the need to put on leaves?
To cover up. Yep.
Why do we?
Yep.
Why do we feel, in whatever situation, why do I feel the need to hide? Why do I have to kind of reach for something external that's going to provide security for me? And I think that whenever you have that impulse, that's what we're talking about.
And I think religion gets that by saying it's because you're bad and you need to try harder. And I think what the gospel says is you're just lost and here's someone who wants to find you and bring you into life. So you need the covering as long as you have that sense of I'm dirty, I'm bad, I need to try harder. And when you lose that in who he is and the work he's done for you, that you could never have saved yourself. You could never have done enough to qualify anything for God. You find this funny?
No, the tone of voice, I'm just finding like, ooh, yes, there's almost an evil anointing on that.
Well, whoa.
No, but it is, it's so powerful. To someone caught in their shame, you simply point out that I know I'm caught in my shame. Now you point that out. Now I'm under even worse predicament because it's like, I don't know how to get free from that.
That's right.
And therefore, if you tell me, here's how to manage this, well, unless I have tasted freedom, that's my only option.
Yeah. And when God unplugs it, see what I love about God unplugging it is you get to recognize when other people are using it on you. And it's like a hook that can't catch anything. There's nothing to hook into. Like Monday, there was a whole lot of that going on with these two guys sitting in my house trying to convince me about their way of doing things. And I'm just thinking, see, I know why somebody not as far on this journey would get really intimidated by the way they're taught to treat you and push the conversation and all that. But I'm sitting there going, none of this is getting anything in me. It's not making me question. It's not intimidating. And that leaves us to be free. And I don't have to react to them and fight them and, you know, rain on their parade. Jesus, you know, Satan is Jesus' brother in the Mormon. I mean, the whole thing has been in the political campaign lately. Them guys in Huckabee's in trouble for. You don't have to be snarky and attack wicked little bits that are just our confusion. You can love them as people.
Right.
And be uninfluenced by their desire to manipulate your shame because you just don't have it to be yanked on.
Gosh, you know, man, I'm sitting here and I'm sort of recognizing that's what's happening in me. I'm just sort of, you know, kind of waking up to the fact that, gosh, the hooks, they don't land. They don't catch in me like they used to. I used to be able to get jerked around and someone said, ooh, and he's like, you feel like, oh, you got my shoulder.
Oh my gosh.
It's like they're pulling me this way. Yes. And I'm like, ooh, I gotta have to respond or at least I have to find a way out of this.
Or you spend countless hours trying to rehearse in your mind. You have to reformat all your theology so you can revalidate yourself to get free of those hooks.
Yeah, and I'm just going like,
it's exhausting.
Gosh, I don't feel the need that I once did. And that must be God conquering some more freedom.
And that's where we get back to the shame thing. Until God gets to the shame in your life and sets you free to be his child on the earth, you're going to bounce between institutions and religious mindsets and finding a box of some kind to be a covering for you. And we got to get to him to say, God, I want to know what Jesus accomplished on the cross for me.
You'd mentioned one other email someone brought in about the whole kind of covering thing and the institutions and I think that would just be absolutely brilliant to bring into this.
Well, I put this on my blog today, which is Thursday as we're taping this. So those of you hearing it tomorrow can look back and read this. But here, I got this from a young mother today. I met her a month or two ago at a thing I was at. She wrote this. Do you think Adam and Eve's need for physical covering is the same need the people of Israel experienced in their desire for Moses as a mediator between them and God? The people of Israel, full of sin and shame, felt they needed something or someone between them and God. Is it this shame, which we religiously call a covering, that keeps us from being in true relationship with a God we don't yet understand? I had never considered that in Adam and Eve's covering, they were inhibiting a transparent relationship with God and each other. In which case, is it possible that a jargon like, you need to be under a spiritual covering, is nothing more than manipulative statement meant to scare us into believing God is full of wrath and we are sinful, so stay covered? Is a covering not a place of safety after all, but a place of hiding, and in reality, bondage? Does our current Christian culture's concept of covering, and she puts in parentheses, nice alliteration, isn't it? Parallel Israel in their fear and shame. Could it be God's desire for us to throw off our covering and begin real relationship?
Wow.
And I've never had a question that deep that I could just answer this way. Here's how I wrote her back. Yes, 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 and yes. You've got it, sis, on all counts. The cross was about God blowing up our need for a covering by resolving our shame in himself. If people really lived in that reality, they would find all of this talk of a need for covering to be absolutely irrational. Covering from what? God? The one who I want to know and the one who already knows me at the core of my being.
We're supposed to be salt and light. And then Jesus' comment is, you put that light under a bushel? It's a new way of thinking what the bushel is.
Absolutely.
And you're just going like, gosh, with all of our forms and structures and the demands of a religious hierarchy, that just seems like another leaf.
Jesus is big enough to hold you in this age.
I don't need the bush.
You don't need a bush or a bushel.
Thank you for traveling with us on The God Journey. You can be part of the conversation by visiting our website, thegodjourney.com,